Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Is The Simpsons better than The Sopranos? Is I Love Lucy better than Mad Men? And where do classics like MASH and The Twilight Zone fit in the landscape of television right now if you ranked everything? My guests today have done it, ranked the top 100 narrative fiction TV shows of all time. By all kinds of measures, they're ready to share their list and take the heat to defend Battlestar Galactica over Parks and Recreation and The Simpsons as number one. This hour On Point, ranking the best American TV shows of all time. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What's your number one? Why? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm going to solve the mystery for you right off the bat. Top five, The Simpsons. Number one, The Sopranos. Number two, The Wire. Number three, Cheers. Number four, Breaking Bad. Number five, and on they go right down through 100, ranked in order. Season 5 of The Simpsons, Homer's lying on the couch trying to eat the last of his honey-roasted peanuts. His peanut falls under the couch. Here, Homer, played by Dan Castellaneta, gropes around for it.
Ow! Pointy! You slimy! Uh-oh! Moving! Uh-huh! Aw, $20! I wanted a peanut!
$20 can buy many peanuts!
Explain how!
Money can be exchanged for goods and services.
There you go. Number one of all time by this ranking. Joining me now from New York are Alan Sepinwall, TV critic for HitFix, and Matt Zoller Seitz, TV critic for New York Magazine, Vulture, editor-in-chief of RogerEbert.com. They are co-authors of TV, the book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. Alan, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
And Matt, welcome. Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
All right, we're going to dive into your choices, but give us your criterion first. You've got half a dozen measures by which you put numbers up against all this. It looks like, some kind of a sports, stats for baseball or something by the time you're all done. What are the measures by which you judge the greatest of all time?
Well, we had six categories, as you say. There was innovation, how innovative was the show? There was influence, how influential was it? There was consistency, duh. There was performance / characterization, which is sort of, how did it portray its characters, either the writing of it or the performance of it. Storytelling / filmmaking, how well did it tell its story and what kind of style did it have? And then we added one more category, which is peak, which is in relation to the other shows in this top 100, how good was it at its very, very best?
Matt, how did you actually do this? Did you go off to your own corners and put you've got 1 through 10 ranking for each of these angles on a show. Did you give each your own and then just come and add them up and that was that, or did you battle it out?
We a little of both. We actually spent, Alan jokes, and it's true, that we spent more time arguing about what was going to be in this book than we did actually writing the book. I mean, it was really hard to choose, and originally we just listed between 200 and 300 shows, and we tried to arrange them in an order, and then we realized that we needed some criteria, and that's how we came up with the ranking system. And we still went back and forth over it a lot. I mean, it took quite a while to figure out what were our criteria, and according to that criteria, what shows were going to be in the top 100.
I mean, it's really interesting to look down here. So you've got, Cheers right up there in the top 5. Arrested Development, pretty high at 15. Then you get on down into all kinds of, My So-Called Life is down at 27. You've got Law and Order at 63. Pretty soon I'm swimming here. The Rocky and Bullwinkle Show, 75. You've got lots that are current. You've got no small number that are from the first golden age or the older years of TV. It's heavily weighted toward television now. Why is that, Alan?
I think just because television on the whole is better now. And that's not to say that there wasn't great things in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. There absolutely was, and a lot of that is represented in the book. And I think probably if you actually went through the top 100, there are far more shows that debuted in the 20th century than in the 21st. But we're at a point now, whether you want to call it a new golden age or peak TV, where there's just a lot of extraordinary stuff happening, and those shows tend to be more artistically challenging and daring and ultimately more successful than some of their predecessors. And of course, they're building on the backs of what came before. But, you know, we've got Lucy in the top 10. We have All in the Family in the top 10. We've got, you know, other shows. Honeymooners finished very highly. There's a lot of vintage
MASH,
TV in there,
yeah,
too.
The oldest show in there is the Jack Benny program, which debuted in 1950.
You get way back there. Twilight Zone comes in at 14. So, yeah, you've got some oldies and goodies in there. So help us out here. The Simpsons at the very top of this, ahead of Sopranos and Wire and Breaking Bad and Mad Men and all the rest. What put it up there?
Well, it was just, you know, as I put it, this show is not just a television show. It is television in many ways. I mean, it's everything that has ever been said or thought about television, the medium that it represents, and also everything that can be shown on television, including movies, sports, talk shows, coverage of American history as it happens. I mean, you know, you name it, if there's a cultural or historical development that occurred at any point since the debut of The Simpsons, and in fact, before that, probably The Simpsons not only dealt with it, but had the last word.
Alan, how do you look at that? I mean, you've got – it's comedy. It's a cartoon. And you hear all these work with sets and actors over the years, and yet it's the sketch and the soundtrack that does it.
Well, I would say a couple things. We actually ran into this because there's a long section of the book called The Great Debate where we eventually had a five-way tie for first between all of these shows, and we had to argue it out. And I wound up arguing for The Simpsons, and Matt was reluctant for a while because there was a part of him that sort of didn't want to accept that a comedy could be considered better than The Wire and The Sopranos, and eventually he accepted that that wasn't okay. But I think that we're too quick to dismiss things that are funny over things that are serious. The serious things get more weight. Animation, like, there's a lot of incredible filmmaking that goes on in The Simpsons. The voice acting on that show that Dan Castellaneta and Julie Kavner and some of the others do is really remarkable. I feel like I know and understand Homer Simpson as well as I do Tony Soprano and some of these other people. It's because it's a goofy and at times very stupid show, as evidenced by the Honey Roasted Peanuts clip that you played at the top of this. Yeah. It's easy to dismiss, but it's so smart and it's so versatile and it's done everything and it's been about everything. And there's no subject in like the 27, 28 years it's been on TV that they haven't touched on, at times predicted. They were doing jokes about Donald Trump being president like a decade ago. It's there.
When it was supposedly in a slump.
Yeah.
You should point that out.
Yes. And yeah, it's just like the first dozen or so years of the show are as good as TV gets. There have been some alleged slumps after that. It's still a very good show right now. But just that peak is better and longer than any other show's peak.
Right.
Yeah, and also just the fact that it was on the air for, you know, I would say all the way up to season 14, it was consistently extraordinary. That's longer than most shows are on the air, period.
We're talking all of TV ever. That is narrative fiction here, rounding out their top 10, Mad Men, Seinfeld, I Love Lucy, Deadwood, All in the Family. And then you get into MASH and Hill Street Blues, The Shield, The Twilight Zone, Arrested Development, The Larry Sanders Show, Sopranos, and The Wire going neck and neck for the second and third spots here. Here's just a little bit remembering the pilot episode of Sopranos, Tony Soprano, played by James Gandolfini, in the therapist's office after he collapses from a panic attack. Therapist asks him why he thinks he might have collapsed, and he explains his thought process.
It's good to be in something from the ground floor. I came too late for that. But lately, I'm getting the feeling that I came in at the end. The best is over.
Many Americans, I think, feel that way.
I think about my father. He never reached the heights like me. But in a lot of ways, he had it better. He had his people. They had their standards. They had pride. Today, what do we got?
Today, what do we got from The Sopranos? Right up against The Wire, here's just a little clip. Omar, who robs street-level drug dealers on the streets of Baltimore, faces off with shady lawyer Maurice Levy in a courtroom played by Michael Kostroff and Michael K. Williams.
You're stealing from those who themselves are stealing the lifeblood from our city. You are a parasite who leeches off
just like you,
the culture
man.
Of drugs.
Excuse me?
What?
I got the shotgun. We've got the briefcase. Still in the game, though, right?
Still in the game, though, right? Alan, how did you put these side by side? Tough, tough calls.
This was hard. I mean, we both wrote for the Star Ledger, which is the paper at the end of Tony's driveway, the entire time that The Sopranos was
right,
on the air.
Famously.
Yeah, so that's we have a great sentimental attachment to that show. That's extraordinary. The Wire was also among the best. And it was really kind of a coin toss. Like, there's a part of me that's probably slightly favors The Wire. Matt probably slightly favors The Sopranos. But it's really just six of one, half a dozen of the other. It's amazing. And one of the reasons I think ultimately that The Simpsons came on top was because we couldn't really choose between the other two, whereas it was pretty easy to separate The Simpsons from Cheers as the second best comedy of all time.
Matt? What about that nose-to-nose, The Wire and Sopranos?
Well, I think that the Wire, except for its layer cake structure, which is pretty extraordinary in and of itself, where they would, you know, they started out telling a story of the cops and the drug dealers, and then they added in season two the docks, and then season three City Hall and the police administration, season four the school system, and season five the media. That's pretty great. But aside from that, I think of The Wire as a compendium of all of the classical storytelling devices that had been done up to that point. Like, it was a recapitulation of things that had been done brilliantly so, whereas I think The Sopranos was genuinely groundbreaking in more ways, and including its strategic use of anti-climax, which was something that I think a lot of TV dramas learned from. And the ending of The Sopranos, I think, is the greatest ending in the history of television, and I still get in fights with people about it. I think it's a great ending. Other people hate it. I love it, and to me it reminds me of the end of like a classic of European art cinema from the 60s, mm-hmm. something like a Blow Up or 2001.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the best American TV shows of all time. The top 100, the top 5, the top 1. With two big critics who have laid it all out, made their case, give you their arguments. In a new book called TV, the book, two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller-Seitz are with us. They were critics together in New Jersey back in the day. Now they've come out with their big list of the very best. Twilight Zone theme behind us right there. You can join us this hour. How do you judge a great TV show, and what's at the top of your list? Is it the plot, the characters, the moment in your life when you watched it that make it great to you? What's your all-time fave? In their top five, and remember, Simpsons number one, Sopranos number two, The Wire number three, number four, Cheers. 1982, series premiere, Diane, played by Shelley Long, has just come into Cheers, a bar owned by Sam, played by Ted Danson. She answers a call on the bar's phone from a woman Sam's trying to dodge. Sam tries to mime an excuse to Diane. Here's Diane on the phone.
I think what happened is he had to go to mime class. Yes, I'll take a message.
Well?
You're a magnificent pagan beast.
Thanks. What's the message?
Interpreting his mime, miming he's a magnificent pagan beast. That's all chuckles and some human nature. Next one on the list, Breaking Bad, not so many chuckles. Season 4, the AMC drama. Skyler White, played by Anna Gunn, confronts her husband Walt, chemistry teacher, of course, turned meth cook, played by Bryan Cranston, tries to convince Walt to go to the police, confess his crimes, admit that he's in over his head.
Let's both of us stop trying to justify this whole thing and admit you're in danger.
Who are you talking to right now? Who is it you think you see? You clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Breaking Bad, not about chuckles. And there we are at 4 and 5. Go right on down the list. You've got The Honeymooners from way back at 17. Louie right behind that, 18. SpongeBob, Mary Tyler Moore Show, 18. SpongeBob SquarePants and Twin Peaks at 22 and 23. And On you go. Get down in the middle of the pack. You got Gunsmoke at 59, Sex and the City at 60. There is a lot to look at here. It's can strike the ear as weird to have the chuckles of Cheers and the super serious menace of Breaking Bad back to back, Matt. But does that have anything to do with it, whether it's chuckles or fear?
No, that's just how the scores shook out. We were surprised when we looked over. We went and ranked all of these shows. There were many more than 100 shows that we ranked. And when we did the spreadsheet, we were pleasantly surprised to see that there was a much more even mix between more recent shows and much older shows, and between comedies and dramas. And that's just how it shook out. And I like the fact that you'll see Cheers sandwiched between The Wire and Breaking Bad, or that you'll see The Honeymooners next door to Louie. That shows the breadth of the medium.
Lost at 24, Buffy the Vampire Slayer at 25. Christine is calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Christina, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I know it's not the greatest show, supposedly, but to me, somewhere in the rankings should count for longevity, how many shows you've spun off, and how relevant it has shown to be. And to me, Star Trek projected a lot of, like the iPhone. There was a lady on the bridge, and it's had a lot of spinoffs and staying power. So that's my suggestion for number one.
That is for sure. Talk about staying power and fans who really love it. And, of course, the 50th anniversary of the original Star Trek this year. Let me see. It looks like it's 61 on your list, Alan. Speak to us of Star Trek, the great Star Trek.
We have both the original Star Trek and Star Trek Deep Space Nine in the top 100, and Next Generation gets mentioned in a separate kind of honorable mention section of the book. Star Trek's wonderful, and we do have a category about influence, and having as many spinoffs and movies and just the influence it's had among its own fandom and helping to create science fiction fandom at large to the degree that it has and define it, all of those things were to its credit, and that's why it's in there, on top of just Kirk and Spock and McCoy being all-time great TV characters.
John in Littleton, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Yes. I wanted to talk specifically about Mad Men. I'm a Mad Men partisan. I really would place that highest on the list, except for The Sopranos. I'm a little disturbed by the comedy and drama being mixed together. I kind of feel like I'd be more comfortable if you made a list of 50 best comedies and 50 best dramas.
Okay, the comedy and drama issue back to back, yes, but Mad Men, here it is. Mad Men comes in very high. It's not like it's dissed here. It's number 6 on your list, just outside the top 5. Alan, speak to Mad Men.
Mad Men's amazing. Mad Men, I think we did a bunch of different phases of the rankings, and I think at one phase it did finish a little bit higher than that. But again, sixth place of all time, we are giving all possible respect to that show, which was extraordinary and very evocative of The Sopranos, where Matt Weiner worked before he created it. I love that. The other thing I would say about the comedy and drama mix is if you look through the list, a lot of the shows on it are both at the same time. Sopranos and Breaking Bad could be wickedly funny.
Yeah.
Cheers could be incredibly moving. All in the Family, some of the best All in the Family moments involve Archie Bunker kind of reckoning with his own bigotry in that way. And those are often the shows that we're drawn to. And it's comparing apples and oranges, but I think that the two can comfortably coexist. And if you're not comfortable with that, you can just sort of look at the book and say, okay, The Sopranos is the number one – The Sopranos is the number one drama and The Simpsons is the number one comedy, and go down the line like that.
Here's from the series finale, of course, you remember Ad-Man, John Draper, played by John Hamm, has left his firm, goes on a road trip, ends in California, calls Peggy Olson's protege, Elizabeth Moss, at his lowest point.
I'm not the man you think I am.
Don, listen to me. What did you ever do that was so bad?
Vows. Scandalized my child. Took another man's name and made nothing of it.
That's not true.
Rough moment at the end of Mad Men. Dwayne in Boulder, Colorado. Thank you for calling, Dwayne. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was listening to your show, and I really think that all the shows that these guys have listed are fantastic. You guys have great taste. But I did notice that the narrative seems to be, I mean, the stories seem to all have the same sort of male protagonist narrative. I was thinking about, you know, Joss Whedon's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, a show that kind of broke the mold in many ways, and a show that kind of, you know, lit the fire for a lot of these multi-story arc TV shows that we have today, and like Lost and BSG and other things like that. So just kind of wondering what they think about shows that take that different.
I mean, maybe that's fair right up at the top here. Simpsons has a lot of guys there, but certainly not only guys. And then you've got I Love Lucy right up here, and
I'm sorry, I gotta disagree.
Yeah, please,
with that.
Please.
We got the pantheon of top 100 shows includes Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Sex and the City, I Love Lucy,
Veronica Mars, Cagney Lacey,
yeah.
Gilmore Girls.
Yeah,
I think
maybe just by luck of the draw we might have mentioned some of those other shows first, but like the ladies are represented. It's not just the dudes. So
no question about it. I want to think about these vectors. You innovation, you say. You want to see whether the show was trying something new. And you say shows like All in the Family and 24 scored high here because they did things no one in American TV had really tried before, whereas you had other great shows like Parks and Recreation, which is, at 46, that you say had comparatively low innovation rating, largely, you know, duplicating the template of The Office.
Yeah. Yeah, and I kind of look at the score ranking for Parks and Rec, and I wish it was a little bit higher because I think just
pretty
in terms
show.
Of rewatchability and love, yeah. I prefer it to some of the things it finished behind. But it didn't do anything new, and it wasn't in any way influential because almost nobody watched it, even though all of its cast members are now becoming movie stars.
Yes.
So,
but I would say that, you know, the affection that we feel for Parks and Recreation did ultimately elevate it above the Office in the rankings, didn't it?
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah. It's right there.
And so even though the Office wins for innovation, when Parks and Rec is basically using the same template, in the end, Parks and Recreation comes out ahead.
Influence, a big factor here. You say, how much of an impact did the show have on the medium or on the culture at large? Shows like Hill Street Blues and Friends, copied by many other TV series, so they score high for influence. Freaks and Geeks, not much time, not many imitators, but high because of the impact the cast and creators had on the entire comedy business, you say. Will and Grace, high because of the role it played in helping to reshape public attitudes about homosexuality.
Yeah, although that show ultimately finished a little bit outside the top 100 because its influence was huge, but we just didn't like it as much as some other comedies around that period.
But influence, one of your sort of six measures here. Kira in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Kira, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My name is Kira, and I'm calling just to comment that I feel, for me, it's very difficult to choose a number one in any category except this category, and it would be the Gilmore Girls because of the intelligence of the show, the way that they were able to look at relationships in a much deeper level, the witty banter back and forth, all the relationships, particularly the mother-daughter and the family, the complexity of all that is unbelievable. And it had the comedy, and it had the drama, and it was very real life, and it represented something for a long time. I mean, it lasted a long time. There was one season without brilliant writer Amy Sherman Palladino, but, you know, it was really amazing, the writing, the acting, everything.
Gilmore Girls, and of course it's coming back for four-show sort of return this fall, which is interesting. Comes in at 87 on your list, ranks pretty high for performance from both of you, but influence lower here, not so influential. What's the high and low of Gilmore Girls to you?
Gilmore Girls was incredibly well written, very funny. Everything Kira said was absolutely true about the relationships between the characters, the mother and the daughter, all of that. You know, we're not really knocking any of the things that are in the pantheon. It's just sort of you got to figure out which things are stronger here or there. I don't think it was ultimately as influential or as innovative as some of the others, but it's a great show. I'm very happy. There's a lot of these revivals these days that I'm very wary of and don't really want to see continue. That X-Files reboot was pretty bad. I'm really looking forward to seeing more Gilmore Girls from Amy Sherman Palladino.
Bill in Hull, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks
Hi.
For taking my call.
Yeah.
I would just like to cast a very heartfelt vote for All in the Family. You guys were just discussing it a minute ago. Every week they manage to raise a significant social issue and disguise it in an hysterically funny comedy. Archie Bunker, as played by Carol O'Connor, was absolutely brilliant. His interaction with Edith and Meathead was just hysterically funny, and at the same time raised issues that were very important at the time. What I remember was I would turn the show off and I would still be chuckling. Yeah. 15 minutes later, I would kind of realize, you know, Dawn over Marblehead, they were talking about some pretty significant stuff. So I would just like to cast a vote for All in the Family. I thought it was absolutely brilliant television and groundbreaking for its time.
I'm right there with you, Bill. I appreciate your call. I remember being very young watching that and gasping at, alongside my father, who was more, maybe a little more Archie Bunker, just at the things they had the chutzpah to talk about. All in the Family, Matt, at number 10 on your list. That's pretty high ranking.
Yeah, well, it was a great show. It was a great show. It was a groundbreaking show. And in addition to its merits, just as a standalone production, the writing, the direction, the performance, and everything else, it also spawned a lot of other important shows. You know, without it, we wouldn't have had Maude. We wouldn't have had Good Times, mm-hmm. The Jeffersons. You know, it single-handedly put, you know, almost a dozen other shows on the air. So it was a big one. It was a really big one. And I, also one that I think the influence of it resonates maybe more now than it did about 10 years ago, because we're seeing a lot more sitcoms that are engaged with social issues, with contemporary politics. Shows like Black-ish and Fresh Off the Boat, I think, are in the spirit of All in the Family. That the Carmichael Show also, I think, is really good.
They're in the spirit. Do they have the intensity of that? At the time, people were just agog at what they were hearing.
I don't think so, but I think, you know, consider the time factor involved. All in the Family debuted in 1971, which was just 6 years after the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah.
You know, this was like something where, like, when you think about the rawness of that show in context of the political history that it was dealing with, these were current events. Like, we look at All in the Family now and we see it as a period piece. But it was the news. It was basically the continuation of the news by other means when it was actually on the air.
Tom in Milwaukee. Tom, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My comment is my favorites have to do with the intensity of telling the story with no downtime. And so I have three briefly to mention. First of all, it's Breaking Bad. I was so captivated with the story, I could not take my eyes off or my ears off any time during that.
Yep.
There was absolutely no downtime. And the story was actually so believable, and it seemed such a great, unique story that it just carried the actors. The other two I want to mention with no downtime that are my favorites is the original Gunsmoke with Dennis Weaver when it was a half hour. Mm-hmm. Very different than the hour show, because when it was a half hour, it had this magnificent short story punch to it. And they lost that when it went to an hour, and that's when the actor who played Festus came in.
Yeah. And what's your third? Our time is short before the break, Tom.
And the third one is Twilight Zone with Rod Serling. When he was the film professor at USC, he used his students. He lost his punch when he went to Night Gallery because he stretched out the same short story to an hour. So those are my three.
Give Tom in Milwaukee intensity. What else would you put in that intense, can't look away category, Alan, Matt?
I mean, there's a lot of them. 24 at its best was kind of like that, but there's also a lot of fat in some of those seasons as you get along. The Americans is a current show, which we list in the works in progress section of the book, that feels very much like that. Like, there's just not an ounce wasted in telling that story, and it's always, you're sort of like in the grip of a nightmare. So
the best episodes of the show that you're playing the theme song for right now, The X-Files, are certainly intense.
The Shield is another one.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With Rocket Mortgage, you can get approved for a mortgage in minutes using a phone or tablet. This completely online process uses cutting-edge technology to make getting a mortgage more convenient than ever before. Now you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button without the frustration of digging through stacks of financial documents. Info at quickenloans.com/onpoint, equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'll be there for you. I'll be there for you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking for a few more minutes about the best American TV shows of all time. The very top. Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller-Seitz are with us. Their new book is TV, the Book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time, and they have ranked them 1 through 100. Simpsons at the top. Take it right on down. Frasier, 32. In Treatment, 35. 30 Rock, 48. The Office, 52. Everybody has their favorites. You can join us, 800-423-TALK. Of course, the theme from Friends behind us right there. I'll be there for you. Number 78 on my guest list of top American TV shows. So many callers for you, too. Addie in Winchester, Virginia. Addie, you're on the air with Alan and Matt.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question is, why do you think The Cosby Show, or is it rated? Is it ranked? Because I have to say, growing up, that was one of my favorite shows. And it's unfortunate because of the scandal that is going on with Bill Cosby. It's not something I can share with my kids. And I think it was a really good show.
It's on there. It's at number 40. Alan, has it changed? Did it change the ranking? Does it change the way you think about it now that Bill Cosby's in so much trouble?
It didn't change the ranking, but it changed the essay. The essay is entirely about what she just asked about. It's, I had just started watching the show with my kids. We were marathoning somewhere, I think, late in season two. I think we gotten up to the Stevie Wonder episode. And then all of these allegations started coming out, and I realized I can't keep showing them this. And my younger son is too young to really understand why. We just had to tell him Bill Cosby did a very bad thing, and we shouldn't watch his show anymore. But, like, you have to grapple with this idea that, on the one hand, it's this extraordinary show, this hugely influential show, just a great family comedy that, because of what its star and executive producer is alleged of doing, just nobody wants to watch it now. And so that's what the essay is entirely about.
Life intersects with the performance there, and the performance suffers in retrospect. Jeff in Worcester, Massachusetts. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I guess first I would say my partial opinion, Seinfeld is absolutely my number one. And it comes in because of just the cultural relevance that it has and how it's permeated multiple generations. And I actually just want to ask the experts a question, and that is that in your rankings, did you ever consider how these shows captivated audiences abroad? Obviously, American pop culture often crosses oceans and proliferates in all sorts of corners of the world. And, you know, some shows have had more of an iconic relevance in other foreign cultures.
Global influence. Our time is short. Let us take it, Jeff. Matt, what do you say?
Maybe in passing a little bit we might have thought about that, but it wasn't really part of the rankings. One of the things that we – one of the difficult decisions that we made before we sat down to write this book was, were we going to consider any television other than U.S. television? And we concluded no, we weren't, because we felt that we could speak authoritatively, about as authoritatively as anybody, to what American TV has produced. But when you talk about what's the best British show, what's the best Danish show, what's the best Japanese show, as an American, you're getting a really skewed sample. You're only getting the stuff that was available to Americans. And a Japanese or an English TV viewer is going to look at your choices and go, well, you're a tourist. What do you really know about our TV?
So we
decided to stick to the U.S.
Keep it home. When TV began, it was so hemmed in by the commercial requirements and the cultural constraints. You write, Alan and Matt, that it no longer is constrained like that. Is it art now, Alan? Is TV art? Is it the leading art form above movies?
It's certainly the most talked about art form. We're not going to get into whether TV is better than movies, but the conversation about TV is just so much louder and more passionate right now than it is about movies or books or anything else. But, I mean, TV, if you look through this top 100, TV was always capable of being an art form. It just wasn't an art form as often. But you look at The Twilight Zone, you look at some of the live film plays of the 50s that Matt writes about near the back of the book, like Marty, those are extraordinary. So it's just there's more art happening now, but TV was always capable of art. It's just sort of the business sense kept getting in the way of that.
Will there always be a difference between the two? I mean, after all, on demand and all the rest, maybe they just merge.
Well, I think the way that we consume media has sort of complicated that. And in fact, the question, what is television, came up quite often as we were writing this book, and it comes up a lot in our daily lives as critics. Television used to be an appliance that sat in your living room and you gathered around and watched the show at a particular time on a particular day. And if you missed it, you had to wait 3 to 6 months for a rerun. Now we watch things mainly on demand. We have DVR. We can summon them on Amazon or Netflix, what have you, and we watch them on our own devices. It's not communal anymore. It's more like reading a novel. Where does that leave us? I don't know. Our you know, stand-up specials and movies that happen to be carried on Netflix alongside original shows. Are they just content? Is everything content now? I don't know the answer to this.
Well, everything that we've ever had, at least the best of it, by your lights, ranked here. The new book is TV the Book. Two experts pick the greatest American shows of all time. Matt Zoller-Seitz and Alan Sepinwall, thank you so much for the work and for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you for having us.
Great to have you both. In a moment, we preview the coming fall TV season. This is On Point. Gilmore Girls made the top 100 list we've just been scouring, and it's coming back for this fall TV season in a four-episode revival. That's the show's theme song, of course, Where You Lead by Carole King. And there's more coming this fall, from Ava DuVernay's show Queen Sugar on the Oprah Winfrey Network to comedy from Pamela Adlon and Louis C.K. in Better Things. We want to look at the best of what's coming. Joining me now from New York is Willa Paskin, TV critic for Slate. You can join us at 1-800-423-TALK with your questions, your tips. Willa Paskin, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. So what's the fall look like?
It's actually looking like a kind of good fall for television. I think, you know, there's the idea that fall is a time for TV is sort of this vestigial thing. It's like school starts and TV starts.
Right.
And now that sort of the networks don't have the stronghold on television as they once did, it's not necessarily that the fall has to be when all the good TV is. But the networks do have a bunch of shows, and finally, for the first time, I think in earnest, all the other networks, not just Fox and CBS and ABC and NBC, are deciding that they too are going to program for fall. So Netflix and Amazon and FX all have a lot of new shows. So there's a lot of really great stuff coming out right now.
So what are you recommending, Willa? What should we be anticipating?
Well, there is really a ton of stuff, so it's hard to narrow things down. I mean, you just played the theme song for the Gilmore Girls, which I am excited about, but, you know, have not seen because it's sort of top secret.
Was that October, November, like that. They come back for those four episodes?
Exactly. I think it's November. Okay. And then there's a couple shows that just started this week that I thought were really good. There's the show Queen Sugar, which you mentioned, which is on the Oprah Network. That's
David
sort of
DuVernay.
A black family drama. Yeah.
What's it about?
It's about a black family in Louisiana, and the father, the patriarch, dies, and three siblings sort of have to figure out what to do with his sugarcane farm. And it's very nicely observed, and it sort of has the signifiers of a serious prestige drama, but it also is pretty fun. It has some silly, some more soapy elements to it, which I always appreciate. And then also this week, a show called Atlanta started on FX, which is by Donald Glover. That's a comedy sort of, as is the way with a lot of prestige comedies now. They're not necessarily laugh out loud funny, but they are smart and humorous, I guess. And then also Pamela Adlon has a show that started last night called Better Things that's really about motherhood, and that's produced by Louis C.K., and it has some sort of similarities to Louis in that it is kind of sort of clear-eyed about parenting and sort of very focused on, it's sort of semi-autobiographical about her, but it's pretty funny, and she's sort of a more brash personality than Louis, so it's a little less sad sack.
Here's a little bit from Better Things, premieres this fall on FX. Sam Fox, a divorced mom, working actress, trying to raise three daughters on her own in L.A., and here's Sam, played by show creator Pamela Adlon. She's floored when her 16-year-old daughter Max, played by Mikey Madison, asks her for pot.
Can I ask you something? Could you get pot for me?
What?
Like, don't you want me to have clean, organic pot?
Honey, these things are normal, but you should be ashamed of them.
You're my mom. I want you to know if I have sex or if I want to get high.
Ah! No, hide things from me. Please.
Can I kick you? Willa Paskin, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. Don't you want me to have clean, organic pot, Mom? Help me get it.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, there's a lot of things like that. She's sort of... that are just very funny, I think. And sort of like, I think parenting is obviously a big topic in life, and it comes up in TV, but it's often in the background. It's like the premise of the show is that it's a family show. It's not really about the act of parenting. And it shows that it is sort of like parenthood. Sometimes it's sort of a very aspirational version of parenting. Like, even when things go wrong, everything goes right. And this, I thought, was a little more... more realistic, but also like focused on what's funny about it instead of sort of kind of be tear-jerking.
There's Queen Sugar from Ava DuVernay, of course, who did Selma, which was very sober, but you say this has got some soapy, even comic angles to it?
It does not have any comic angles.
Okay.
That's an interesting thing about the show.
Okay.
It's not just soapy. It's like, I think humor is a really important quality in a television show. You know, like even The Wire, for example, or Mad Men are very funny. They can be dryly funny. And Queen Sugar is not particularly funny, but it does have some sort of soap elements that do the same thing that humor does, which is kind of like lighten the mood and draw you in and are just sort of entertaining. One of the characters is married to, like one of the sisters is married to a NBA player, and he gets caught up in a scandal, and their storyline is very sort of, it has sort of reality TV intimations. Like it gets a little ridiculous, but it worked in the context of the show, I thought, which was really finely observed in every other way. So it just was sort of like a welcome bit of drama.
Queen Sugar from Ava DuVernay. We're looking at the new fall season coming. If you want to look at it that way, Pitch from Fox. Tell us about it.
So Pitch is a show about the first major league ball player who is a woman. So
this is imagined, I guess.
Yes.
Okay. Imagined. Okay. A woman makes it into the absolute majors. No women's league stuff here.
Right. She's a great screwball pitcher. It's like about her beginning in the major leagues. And it's, you know, it's a network show, and it's actually, it's sort of what the network should be doing in the sense that it's kind of like, obviously it has a sort of poppy hook. It's like it's a very easily accessible idea for what a show could be. And it's sort of fantastical, but in a sort of empowering way. But it's like as well done, it's as realistically done as it could be, right? It's like about a young woman who sort of has been trained by her father to be a baseball player. He didn't make it into the majors, and he's really fixated on her being great. And she has this pitch that is not so fast, because women probably could never throw as fast as they need to, but it moves, you know. And so it's about like her trying to get into play for the Padres. So it actually, you know, I mean, I'm sort of a sucker for lots of those baseball movies like Bull Durham or Field of Dreams, or you know, movies where people are on the mound like all chatting and having conversations about baseball. And there are moments like that in the show. Mark Paul Gosselaar is in it as well as sort of a catcher who's like an all-star catcher who sort of has to decide if he's going to give her a hand. And it was well done for what it was. I only saw the first one.
Pitch from Fox. It's with Kylie Bunbury plays Ginny Baker, African-American female pitcher with a screwball pitch that is just wicked enough to get her a spot on the San Diego Padres. We're looking at the upcoming TV season with Willa Paskin. Callers for you. Brimfield, Massachusetts. Michaela's calling. Michaela, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. What's on your mind?
So what's on my mind now is this whole new era of just really channeling into the raw culture that we have now. So I feel like TV shows in the past were a little bit more glitz and glam than focusing on more of the fun aspects of life, like Sex and the City. But now we're really getting down to the nitty-gritty. So shows like Modern Family are really focusing on troubles that families go through in day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And I would say that there's also some Netflix series such as Shameless that just really get down to the hardness and rawness of what life is really becoming.
No question. I mean, they can do it with a smile, but they get into all the funky stuff. Michaela, I appreciate your call. Willow, what about that front? I mean, family dramas or comedies that, or you name it, that just lay it all out there in the way that we can culturally now on TV and really couldn't in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that TV is better than it once was, is that it's not, it's allowed to talk about everything and to be thoughtful about it. But I mean, I do think that there are a lot of comedies like Blackish or Fresh Off the Boat that talk about interesting things, but also do it in a really hilarious way where it's not like watching it hurts you, you know, or it's like a depressing thing to watch a comedy. It's like it is as enjoyable as comedies have ever been. They just have something else to say. I would also just add that was funny because Shameless is actually a Showtime show. I know that it airs on Netflix now, but just talking about how impossible it is to know where anything airs anymore and where we all watch things in totally different ways. It's like it also sort of makes fall a sort of interesting thing because so many shows that are starting now, people aren't going to get to until they want to get to them in some months and some different platform.
We mentioned Pitch. I've got a little sound from that here where the character Mike Lawson has been he's a pitcher in the majors, replaced by Ginny Baker. First woman is the plot here to pitch in Major League Baseball. She's maybe not as strong as a male pitcher, but she's got this great trick pitch as a secret weapon. Here he confronts her, Ginny, played by Kylie Bunbury.
Enjoy your moment in the sun, because there's 29 pro teams as we speak figuring out that little trick pitch of yours. And when they do, I'll get my job back and you'll become the answer to a trivia question.
Okay.
Okay. What else, Willa? We've got you for one more minute. What else should we be looking for?
There's so much great stuff, but one of my favorite shows that's starting next week is High Maintenance, which is starting on HBO, and it's based on this web series. It was a web series, a beautifully produced web series that HBO picked up to full series, and it's about a weed dealer who is not the main character, but he sort of is like the way you get into all these different people's lives. He sort of brings you around all New York City into different homes, and you see these very, very funny, but very sociologically precise stories of different walks of life in New York. And it's a really great show, and they made the transition to HBO beautifully. So now there's like 30 minutes of it. It used to be sort of 4-minute episodes or 11-minute episodes, and now they're a full half hour, but they're still great. And
what a great way to get into homes as the weed dealer, see what's going on. Give us one more in the seconds that we've got. What have you got, Willa?
Also, there's this new show called The Good Place, which is starting on NBC and is a comedy from Mike Schur, who is the creator of Parks and Recreation. And I've seen the first one, and it's hard to know with a first comedy if it's going to be good or bad, but it's set in sort of a version of heaven. But a woman has ended up there who is actually a terrible person, and she doesn't deserve to be there, and she sort of sets the whole thing askew. Everything goes a kilter, but it's a sort of, it is an interesting and sort of fantastical show. It has this, it's sort of like Defending Your Life, the Albert Brooks.
If it's got a tie to Parks and Recreation, I'm in. The Good Place, coming this fall. Willa Paskin, TV critic for Slate. Willa, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. Happy viewing. This is On Point.